This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a special Memorial Day edition of Washington Watch. As we pay tribute to those who have given their lives in defense of our nation and our freedoms, we're grateful for them. And I encourage you to pause and take a moment just to reflect on the sacrifices that so many have made. Oftentimes, this is just kind of seen as a long weekend. Well, this is a special day in which we reflect upon those who have made the ultimate sacrifice, as well as their families, who continue to go about life without a loved one, someone who has sacrificed greatly. As Jesus said, greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends. And it really is something that is unique to Western civilization where, you know, not for pay, not for glamour or glory, but rather for a love of this country and fellow man will people lay down their lives willingly. And one of the freedoms that is so essential that they have defended, our first freedom, the freedom of religion, is under serious threat. While we as Americans are maybe just facing cultural hostility to that first freedom, and in some cases government prosecution for living out our faith, in many parts of the world, Christians are being killed for their faith in Jesus Christ. We've talked about that several times on the program. But according to a recent study by the Center for Studies on New Religions, some 90,000 Christians were killed for their faith in Jesus Christ in 2016. Now, Christians targeted by ISIS and others are the most persecuted religious group in the world, according to the study. Is the persecution of Christians new, or is this a repeat of something that has happened before? What can we learn from persecution that has taken place in the history of the church? Well, today, we're going to take a look back in history, way back to the beginning of the church, some 2,000 years back. To take us on this journey, we're going to be talking with one of my favorite Americans, the one and only Bill Bennett. From his days behind a government desk to his days behind a microphone, Bill has been a once-in-a-generation influencer in a country hungry for truth. Twice he served in cabinet-level roles at the Department of Education under President Ronald Reagan and as the nation's first drug czar under President George H.W. Bush. Beyond Washington, his classroom only expanded. Through his radio program and countless best-selling books on virtues and American history, he has served as a genuine wake-up call to a nation in need of his timely and timeless message. And today, we're going to be discussing one of those messages from his book, Tried by Fire, The Story of Christianity's First 1,000 Years. Bill Bennett, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you. Always good to be with you.
Well, Bill, as I've told you before, I get a lot of books, all right? And I don't read them all, kind of busy. But I read some, and I will tell you, this book I read from cover to cover, and it's marked up, it's annotated, because it's got some great stories, illustrations, encouragement, but very timely, in my view, and I want to get into that in this program today. But
sure.
First, let me just ask, how's Bill Bennett doing?
Bill Bennett's still chugging along. Bill Bennett's doing okay. Really, I'm continuing. I loved what you had to say in the introduction. I'm still continuing my conversation with the American people. Now I'm doing a podcast. I'm a Fox contributor. You said I extended my conversation when I left government through books and other things. And nothing has been more invigorating to me than talking to the American people. And I will say, Tony, to you, what I've said to so many people on Capitol Hill, don't underestimate the American people. They're smart. They're good. They're decent. They want the right things. And don't talk down to them. Talk up to them.
Well, and I think we saw what the American people can do when they turned pretty much the political world on its head last November.
Am I giving advice to Capitol Hill or am I giving advice to the people who cover Capitol Hill? Goodness gracious, what a rebuke.
By the way, is this
what St. Augustine calls invincible ignorance? Did the press not learn anything from this? As I listen to them these days, I'm not sure they learned anything from their embarrassment, their total embarrassment about this presidential election.
Well, I mean, you have a pretty good frame of reference going back to Ronald Reagan when he was in the White House and you were right there at the center of activities. I mean, what I have seen in my shorter tenure in Washington is that the media has really tries to shape the outcome by their projections and really not projections. That's their reporting that are they're guised as report. It's guised as reporting. It's hidden as reporting. And it's actually projections. But what's happened, in my view, is that the American people are no longer listening to them.
I think that's right. However, they say they're not listening. But, you know, the stuff seeps in through the airbeds. You know, I'm using an analogy. It's out there. You know, if you just, I was in a hospital waiting room the other day, waiting for a friend. And, you know, and channel after channel, person was flipping around. And it was in the morning. And it was anti-Trump this, anti-Republican that, anti-Paul Ryan that. And, you know, people are shaking their heads, but, you know, it's still on and it still penetrates. And I think you're right. If you ask people straight on, do you have confidence in this institution, they'll tell you no. But it's still out there. And when it becomes, for a lot of people, the only means of gathering news, it can still have this this process, this effect, I should say. So I think we do everything we can to counter it. I love what Flannery O'Connor says. You have to push as hard as the age that pushes against you. I don't have to tell you that. It's Family Research Council. And this age pushes against us, things we believe, and a lot of the media pushes against the truth.
Well, and that's nothing new. And that's what I want to talk about today as we talk about your book, Tried by Fire, Story of Christianity's First 1,000 Years. Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, special Memorial Day edition of Washington Watch. My guest, my good friend, Bill Bennett. Bill,
you know, Tony, I always do this. I just got to apologize to you and your audience. Somebody said you write great books and you do bad book tours because every time you're talking about your book, you forget about the book you've written. You want to talk about what's going on today. Let's move on. Thank you for the discipline of bringing me back to our subject.
Well, but it's really in many ways they're folded together. There's this merging of history and today's activities.
Yeah.
And this book is fascinating to me. The First 1,000 Years of the Church. And I think a lot of Christians don't know the history of the church, and those that do know our history have forgotten some of it. But I want to start with a real basic question, and that is, why did you write this book about the first 1,000 years of church history?
It was my editor at Thomas Nelson, Joel Miller, you may know Joel, who edited several books for me, who had this idea. I have to give it to him. He said, I think you should do this. And here's a rough outline. He not only gave me the idea, he gave me the outline. Joel's an evangelical Christian. And he said, you know, you've written the history books, you've written the philosophy books. This is the book for you to write. I got to tell you a funny story in this regard, if you don't mind. I said, first 1,000 years, if it's successful, do we do the book on the second 1,000? He said, Bill, I love you. I respect you. But you are a Catholic. I said, we don't trust you for the second 1,000.
Yeah, I noticed that in the book. We stopped just a little short.
Yeah. He said, we get close to the Reformation, we're going to go to somebody else. I said, come on, I'll do another job for you. Anyway, I thought that was funny. But it was Joel's idea, and I was very taken with it. And, you know, when he wrote the outline, it was like a two-page outline, the first thing that quickened in my brain, Tony, were those stories that I heard in Catholic school about the saints, about the martyrs, about St. Stephen, about the arrow, about being stoned, all these things, about the catacombs. And a lot of this started to come back, and I realized, boy, this is a part of me I haven't thought about in a long time. Let's revisit it. And so I was happy to go back and revisit it.
Well, I tell you,
that was the genesis of the book.
As I was reading, I mean, there were times when there's some of the stuff, the research that went into this had to been immense. I mean, my palms were sweating just thinking of having to put all those hours into research that you did in this book. How long did it take you to do the research?
2.5 years. I had help. I had a staff at the radio show, And I hired one guy principally and others to ask, just fired a bunch of questions and, you know, got info and then said, send me the best books, send me the research, the best books, the most respected scholarly volumes on each century or each part of the first 1,000 years. Got those books, read them, and then proceeded to develop the narrative. But I do not pretend to be a scholar of any particular period here. I'm a generalist, and I worked off the scholarship of others. But I wanted to write a compelling narrative, a kind of adventure and discover, and a story of faith it's really hard to comprehend. Your introduction, Tony, when you talked about today and what's going on today, you're right. There is precedent for it back then. But, you know, just to tell the end of the story, there's more persecution of Christians today than there was then. It's probably the worst period in America in world history. And that is really something to think about.
It really is, but it also, when you look at the history and the beginnings of the church and the opposition, you know, one of the things that stuck out to me, Bill Bennett, was that when the church is on the move, when the church is expanding, when the message of hope is going out, that's when the opposition intensifies. And I think that's a part of what we see today, is that while the church is somewhat I would say asleep, that might be a little harsh, maybe not, in the West. In other parts of the world, the church is on the move, and that opposition is intense.
The more it moves, the more intense the opposition. I quoted Flannery O'Connor. People can quote Flannery O'Connor as the devil can cite the Bible. It can be used against you. The worse an age pushes, the harder an age pushes against you, the harder you must push back. These people know that Christianity is working, is persuading people, is bringing people around, and so they push back harder. If there are two axioms that I come away with having written this book, that's one of them. That the more Christianity advances, the more successful it is, the more people it attracts, the worse will be the opposition, the harder and harsher will be the attack. And the second lesson is the one that kind of transcends all. The harder you push against these people of Jesus, the harder you push against these people of the Word, the stronger their faith becomes. It is extraordinary what people went through and kept the faith. And I asked any number of scholars, I said, of all the Christians who were persecuted in the first 100, 200, 300,000 years, you know, what percentage of them gave up the faith, relented, said, okay, never mind, I'll step on the cross? And nobody can give you a number, but every scholar I talked to, Tony, said most of them did not relent. Most of them kept the faith. Most of them did not succumb.
And that
to the temptation, and despite the tortures, which are unbelievable,
and that is our, and that's our heritage. That's our heritage as believers. Hey, Bill, we're up against a break. Hold on, we're going to come back and finish this conversation, folks. My guest, Bill Bennett, talking about his book, Tried by Fire. Don't go away. A lot more to come. You're listening to Washington Watch.
Mark your calendars for the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. With a new administration in place, America is primed for change. Seize the moment to inform and mobilize Americans to protect religious liberty, champion traditional values, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. Invited speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Lash, Franklin Graham, Dr. Alveda King, Benjamin Watson, and many more. Plus, don't miss the opportunity to network and meet with organizations and other values voters to discuss the most pressing issues of our day, including religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, and more. On October 13th through 15th, join us for the premier conservative event in the country. Register now at the early bird rate of $99 until May 31st. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join me, my wife, Luana, along with General Jerry Boykin and other special guests on our first ever Free to Believe Alaska cruise from July 29th to August the 5th. We'll sail from Seattle on Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam, known for impeccable five-star service and incomparable cuisine. Some of the most breathtaking beauty in God's creation will surround you as you rest, relax, and worship. You'll witness stunning wildlife and the majestic scenery of Glacier Bay and relive Gold Rush history and classic frontier towns. And you'll hear the latest updates from Washington on the new administration and Congress. Come fellowship with other like-minded believers and journey with us on a vacation that will enrich your body, mind, and soul. For more information, call 844-872-5155 or visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that's 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
Imagine being threatened by the government for reading a magazine article. This is exactly what Don Vanderboon, owner of the West Michigan Beef Company, experienced when USDA inspectors threatened to shut down his operation because of reading material that they found in his company break room, which defended biblical marriage. Mr. Vanderboon's employees were well aware of the material and of the company's publicly stated Christian principles and had no objections. As we all know, religious liberty is an indelible thread woven into the fabric of America. Without it, the American experiment will fail. Yet time and time again, the freedom of Americans to believe and live out those beliefs has been attacked by government action. Now more than ever, our first freedom of religious liberty needs protection. Watch a special program hosted by FRC President Tony Perkins, where you'll hear from real people whose freedom to believe has been affected in real ways, including Mr. Vanderboon himself. Go to frc.org/believe to watch this special presentation.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Memorial Day special edition of Washington Watch. Talking with my good friend Bill Bennett about his latest book, Tried by Fire, the story of Christianity's first 1,000 years. And Bill, right there at the break, we were talking about those that refused to give up the faith. They became stronger in the face of opposition, in the depth and strength of their faith. And as I was pointing out, that's our heritage as believers, as followers in Jesus Christ. There are those who have come before us that have faced, I mean, when I read through some of these stories, 15-year-old girls who stood firm in the faith in brutal, torturous environments, but yet they did not deny Jesus Christ. And I think it's so important that we know that history because it challenges us to be bold and courageous as well.
It should. It certainly should. I don't know how people feel if they read the book. As I wrote the book, I felt guiltier and guiltier and weaker and wondered more and more whether I would stand up, whether I would hold up. Anyone reading these stories would wonder. I mean, I guess I don't want to go through the details of these tortures. They're in there. People can read them. But anything a human being is capable of imagining of a diabolical nature happens to these Christians. But again, the more Christianity advances, the more the oppressors seek to exterminate. Harder they push, stronger the faith.
Let me touch on that point because I'm one that I don't like. I know my background, everything I've done, law enforcement, military, and all that. But I usually avoid books that go into graphic detail on things. I just don't want to be reminded of how evil man is because I've seen how evil man is. But I think you handle that very delicately in the book.
Thank you.
The way it is told, it is not in any way, I mean, it's just appropriate. And so I think you handle that just right and so that it is not overwhelming, but it leaves the reader with a sense of understanding of what these folks faced and the deprivation that they often encountered because of their faith, which is another thing that's happening today. Many Christians aren't losing their lives, but they're losing their livelihoods and facing deprivation as a result of standing firm in their faith in Jesus Christ. And that, too, is a part of the legacy of the opposition to the church.
Yes, sir. If there's one quote that could capture the book, I think it would be Tertullian. The blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. That's right. And we have to remember that. Again, just the extraordinary sacrifice that people made. And, you know, it begins so modestly, so humbly, and then it spread. It spread like wildfire all over the world, all over the globe. And, of course, people reading today, Tony, about the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there it is, Syria, yeah. You know, the site of so many things. The Middle East, all these places that we're reading about with regard to ISIS and our struggles. These are places where Christianity was gaining a foothold and getting stronger and stronger. And then, you know, the philosopher in me, I mean, I love the stories, the heresies, the fights, the theological disputes. One of my favorite parts of the book is the Council of Nicaea, called right. by Constantine the Emperor. And, you know, these debates among these bishops and elders of the church, the things that they went to the mat for, and then these towering figures, Pope Gregory, St. Augustine or Augustine, these are characters worth paying attention to.
They really are. And the I want to talk a little bit about there are episodes during the history of the church where there were things done in the name of the church, but they certainly weren't done in the spirit of the church. There were clearly some ungodly leaders in the history of the church that led the church to do some things that, quite frankly, were evil.
Awful. Evil. We had some terrible popes. I can say that. Easier for me to say, I suppose, than for you to say, but happy to say it. Some awful popes, and we had some popes who were nothing short of saintly, nothing short of exemplary. Can I talk about the Council of Nicaea for just a minute?
Go right ahead.
Because, you know, I just thought of that this would be such a great hour special somewhere, you know, in TV or the movies. Here's the emperor of the world, of Rome, Constantine, and sympathetic Christianity. He calls this conference in Nicaea. Most of the elders of the church come, all of the important figures. They're debating this very difficult, obscure theological point. But the drama of the council, where he asks people to state their views, pro and con. And here's Arius, this figure in the church who is an elder in the church, a distinguished bishop, tall, thin, wispy, soft voice, but very eloquent. And he is opposed by Athanasius, short and tough and very powerful voice. Dark skinned, he's nicknamed the Black Dwarf, and they have this debate back and forth over days. At one point, one of the bishops on the side of Arius makes an argument, and one of the people on the other side defending what he thought was Orthodox doctrine, which became Orthodox doctrine, comes up to him and slaps him in the face. He is so enraged. The bishop who comes up and slaps this other bishop in the face is Saint, or becomes Saint Nicholas, or Santa Claus, right? The Bishop of Myra, and he is so enraged by the theological heresy that he can't contain himself and slaps this bishop in the face. But to the philosopher in me, to see the kind of investment these people had, Tony, in this debate about the nature of the substance of God and the relationship between Jesus and God the Father. It's so exciting. It's so interesting. Talk about things that matter to people, that people care about. And there are things like this that happen over and over again in the history of this amazing religion.
And in many ways shape where we are today. I mean,
yes,
those
they
were
do.
Their
oh, yes,
foundation.
They do. Listen, I.
Hey, Bill, we're up against a break.
Sure,
hold on.
Sure.
We got to go to a break. You got to tell people some messages here. So hold on. We're coming right back. We're going to finish this conversation with Bill Bennett, talking about his latest book, Tried by Fire, the story of Christianity's first 1,000 years. Don't go away. We're coming back with a lot more right after this.
When you think of hot button issues, what comes to your mind? For most of America's history, religious liberty was fairly uncontroversial. Not anymore. What happened? I'm Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council. Religious liberty is now a heated issue, right alongside topics like abortion and sexual identity. It's often placed in quote marks in news stories, as if there's more going on than really meets the eye. But what does religious liberty really mean, and why is this so controversial? The public discussion of what was once a tame topic is now a point of sharp division. How did we reach this point? A new FRC brochure entitled Religious Liberty, An Introduction to Our Freedom to Believe, simplifies this complex issue in an easy-to-read format. Discover the true meaning of religious liberty, who is affected by it, why it's being infringed, why you should care, and what you can do about it. You will find answers to these common questions at frc.org/religious liberty.
Mark your calendars for the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. With a new administration in place, America is primed for change. Seize the moment to inform and mobilize Americans to protect religious liberty, champion traditional values, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. Invited speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Lash, Franklin Graham, Dr. Alveda King, Benjamin Watson, and many more. Plus, don't miss the opportunity to network and meet with organizations and other values voters to discuss the most pressing issues of our day, including religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, and more. On October 13th through 15th, join us for the premier conservative event in the country. Register now at the early bird rate of $99 until May 31st. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Again, a special edition of Washington Watch today, Memorial Day edition. And I do hope you'll take a moment to reflect upon the great sacrifices that have been made by men and women throughout the history of this country to ensure the freedoms that we have. And one of those essential freedoms we're talking about today are freedom of religion and the history of the church. Talking with my friend Bill Bennett, latest book, Tried by Fire, the story of Christianity's first 1,000 years. And I'm just to tell you, folks, it's worth the read. It is informative, it's inspiring, it's encouraging, and I'll tell you, it's one of those that you really, it's kind of hard to put down. But the stories are broken up where you can kind of get one, read one, you can finish it out and still go to sleep at night, which makes it nice, Bill. So thanks for doing that.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Let's go back. You're talking about the councils, Council of Nicaea. We're talking about the Nicene Council and what took place there and how those councils were formative for the church. But I want to ask you a question about Constantine, because the way you write about him in the book, it leaves me with the same impression I think you had, is that he seems to be genuine, but we're not quite sure.
Yeah, that's right. Undecided, or if you were a teacher in school, you might say incomplete, question mark. He certainly advanced the church in some ways by issuing edicts against torture, by taking the teachings of the church seriously. But then there was some ambivalence, and then there were some people around him and associated with him who were not so. And, you know, if you look at the history of Roman emperors during this period, a lot of them engaged in some very rough business. But he is he's a critical figure. Constantinople, as recently as, what, 2 or 3 years ago, the great church there built by him was converted to a mosque. Again, the book is it's about things that are so old, but it constantly is reminding us of things that are going on in the present. you know, because of the Islamic direction there in Turkey. But yes, an ambivalent figure. I'm a little more sympathetic to him than I think a lot of people are, because I think that he gave his blessing to enough important things and people that overall, to judge a man in the totality of his acts, he was good for Christianity and not bad.
He was. And there were some other emperors, some rulers that were good for Christianity, others not so much so. And I think that the whole understanding of the separation of church and state, although that came about later in time, you know, with our English brothers, and the understanding of what happened in the church in England and the government. But even there, we see how when there is a merger of the state and the church, it can be very problematic.
Yeah. And this was a problem both sides, if you will, because there wasn't in the minds of a lot of people in that time any notion that there should ever be a separation, either on the part of the Romans, who wanted to enforce their religion, and won't you, they said to the Christians, bow down before the gods of Rome. No, said the Christians, but we would like to see a Christian theocracy. And that's not a separation of church and state either. The notion that you could have civil authority and religious authority living in some kind of equipoise takes a long time in civilization to develop. It evolves over this period, but we're not there.
Right.
At the end of the first millennium, not by any stretch.
But once we arrive to that point, it provides for, I think, much greater stability in the church when there is a separation from the state, because you could see this back and forth. It was almost like a tennis match, depending on who was reigning as the civil leader.
But, Tony, I'll ask you, and you'll know the answer better than I. You've been around the world. How many countries can pull this off?
Yeah, not many.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, why can't China let Christianity flourish? You know, why can't the Islamic countries let Christianity flourish? We have done this one, I mean, with challenges, the challenges you live in, Family Research Council lives with every day. And, you know, we're always looking, we're always ready to, you know, to defend our faith. But we've still more or less pretty much put it together in the right way in this country, at least historically. Not a lot of countries have.
Well, we're almost up against another break, then we'll be back and we'll wrap up in our final segment. But I want to kind of distill this down as, and I don't want to, I mean, there's so much to cover in this book. So folks, I want to encourage you to get a copy, read it. Every Christian needs to know their history. And this is a great source because of the way it's written, and it's very easily digested. And Tried by Fire, The Story of Christianity's First 1,000 Years by William J. Bennett. When we come back, Bill, I want to talk about what you were hoping. Number one, I want to know, did you know that when you wrote this book that it would be so timely as to what we see unfolding today? Last year, 90,000 Christians losing their lives. Secondly, what were you hoping would be the takeaway for Christians living in the year 2017? So we're going to talk about that when we come back here on Washington Watch. Folks, you're listening to a special edition of Washington Watch, a Memorial Day edition. I do want to encourage you to take a moment, pause, and be thankful for those who have been willing to lay down their lives for our freedom in this country. More importantly, be thankful for the one who laid down his life for us, that we might have true eternal freedom. And that's what we're talking about today when we look at the history of the church. We're going to come back and wrap up our interview with Dr. Bill Bennett right after this break. So don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch in a moment.
Girls having privacy in school showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms is a no-brainer, right? Not everybody thinks so. Fairfax County, Virginia has become ground zero in the efforts to impose transgender ideology on American school children. The school system there is one of the largest in the United States, and its close proximity to Washington, D.C. has made it a target for the efforts to mainstream this radical ideology. Even after the Trump administration revoked Obama's directive threatening the nation's public schools, the fight continues at the state and district level. But parents and concerned citizens can fight back. In a recent panel discussion, three different perspectives from a school board member, a concerned parent, and an attorney are presented. They expose the tactics used by the transgender lobbyists and explore the strategies parents and taxpayers can use to fight back. Discover how to implement a 5-point plan to educate, explain, engage, empower, and elect in order to combat the transgender ideology in public schools. Visit frc.org/events to view this vital discussion. Imagine being threatened by the government for reading a magazine article. This is exactly what Don Vanderboon, owner of the West Michigan Beef Company, experienced when USDA inspectors threatened to shut down his operation because of reading material that they found in his company break room, which defended biblical marriage. Mr. Vanderboon's employees were well aware of the material and of the company's publicly stated Christian principles and had no objections. As we all know, religious liberty is an indelible thread woven into the fabric of America. Without it, the American experiment will fail. Yet time and time again, the freedom of Americans to believe and live out those beliefs has been attacked by government action. Now more than ever, our first freedom of religious liberty needs protection. Watch a special program hosted by FRC President Tony Perkins, where you'll hear from real people whose freedom to believe has been affected in real ways, including Mr. Vanderboon himself. Go to frc.org/believe to watch this special presentation. Mark your calendars for the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. With a new administration in place, America is primed for change. Seize the moment to inform and mobilize Americans to protect religious liberty, champion traditional values, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. Invited speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Lash, Franklin Graham, Dr. Alveda King, Benjamin Watson, and many more. Plus, don't miss the opportunity to network and meet with organizations and other values voters to discuss the most pressing issues of our day, including religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, and more. On October 13th through 15th, join us for the premier conservative event in the country. Register now at the early bird rate of $99 until May 31st. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at tperkins. All right, special edition today of Washington Watch, Memorial Day edition. And talking to Dr. Bill Bennett about his latest book, Tried by Fire, The Story of Christianity's First 1,000 Years. And we've been talking about some of the, you know, the challenges that have been out there and how they relate to today. But there's also some very encouraging stories of how, you know, God just moved through people, through men and women. I mean, that's how God, I believe, works in history, is he works through people, works through his church. And it's an amazing stories in this book, Tried by Fire, The Story of Christianity's First 1,000 Years. Dr. Bennett, all right, I want to get to some of these, some more of these stories here before we wrap up. But I want to ask you this question. When you wrote the book, did you have a sense that we would be in such a challenging time as we are in 2017 in terms of the church and the opposition that it's facing?
No, I actually went into the writing of the book with a prejudice, a disposition, a turn of mind, which was incorrect, which is I thought, let's go tell this story about the time of the worst persecution of Christians. And I was just wrong.
Wow.
The worst time of the worst persecution of Christians is now. What was the number you used? I hadn't heard that before from the report you cited. 90,000 Christians last year.
90,000, according to one of the latest surveys by the Center for Studies on New Religions.
I think it's the worst period. Also, all sorts of things are going on in places like China, I'm sure, that we don't know about, undocumented.
Right.
But, when I saw that first time, that lineup on the beach of Christians, you remember this?
Right, the Coptic Christians.
I thought, my God, you know, this is second century. But no, it's being televised around the world. So man's capacity for evil does not change. Man's capacity for good does not change. The struggle, the psychomachia, as the Greeks called it, the struggle between good and evil for the possession of the human soul remains.
So then what is the takeaway? What would you hope that those reading this book in 2017 about what took place close to 2,000 years ago, what would be your desire for them to walk away with?
Ever vigilant. This is not an old story. It's a contemporary story. Solzhenitsyn gave the great address at Harvard was the 80s, and he said, we have learned that Christianity can survive the worst kind of oppression. We learned that from these martyrs of old. We learned it from today. I learned it from the Gulag. He had a different warning for us in the U.S., the Western culture. He said, I don't know if Christianity can survive comfort and affluence and ease and distraction and amusement. The threat may be less 1984, and more The Brave New World, the two novels, those two dystopian novels. It's a very interesting warning. The people we grieve for when we look at these things on TV and we hear about what goes on in China, we hear about what goes on in Syria and elsewhere, we have a right to grieve for and we have a right to help. But we need to be conscious of the threat that we face, which is different,
Right.
It's a threat of as one person called it, distraction. It's not so much oppression, it's distraction. And in many ways, we are a people, many of us, self included, distracted by the wrong things too often.
Yeah, and I often make this point when we talk about these cases that are occurring in the Middle East and elsewhere, this persecution of Christianity, that to the degree that we're distracted and we allow the government-sponsored hostility or indifference here at home certainly sets the tone for what happens abroad from the terrorist and the tyrant. So it's important, I believe, that we pay attention to these things, not only addressing it overseas, but addressing it here domestically as well.
Understanding it's a different – the threat is of a different nature.
Right.
It's kind of like when people say that, you know, ISIS may not invade the United States – but look what's happening in Europe. It's not an invasion, but if you outbreed, going to a community and have 12 children on average in your group, as opposed to the 1.5 children that the native Parisians or Italians are having, it makes a difference.
Let's talk, Dr. Bennett, about some of the many, I know we don't have time, but some of the bright lights of the early church and some of those remarkable accounts that inspire us, and should inspire us, and encourage us in our walk today.
Heroes. I was asked, okay, you wrote about the first 1,000 years. Best pope, Gregory the Great. Not a corrupt pope, and I say that as a Catholic. Because a lot of them were, because as we were talking earlier, they were not only the head of the church, but they were the head of the state. And, absolute power corrupts. Gregory the Great persisted. It had tremendous and deep concern for the poor and the unevangelized. A wonderful figure. The character that I find irresistible, and I've read a lot about him before, but reading about him for this book, Augustine.
Yeah.
We call him St. Augustine in the church. But here's a story for moms. I asked a group of students a few years ago, Tony, I said, do any of you know who Monica is? And, of course, I got a titter. I got giggles. Well, you mean Monica Lewinsky? You know? I said, no, Monica, the mother of Augustine, St. Monica in our church. Monica was Augustine's mother. And, my boy's mother just walked in the room. Hi, friend of yours, Tony. Hi.
Tell her I said hello.
Okay, I will say hello. Anyway, she was the original hovercraft. Is that what we call it? Helicopter mom?
That's right.
Augustine was a mess. He was a bad adolescent. He was a bad kid. Famous line, oh, Lord, give me chastity, but not yet.
Yes.
Right? This was a teenager. And he was wayward. He drank. He, this wasn't invented in the 20th century. He did all the things a young boy was inclined to do but shouldn't do.
But he had a praying mother.
She stayed on him. She prayed for him.
Yeah.
She stayed with him. When he went left, she followed him, and she prayed for him. And I remember my friend, Cardinal Chaput,
yes.
Former Archbishop
yes.
Chaput,
yes.
Great man. He said, he used the word worried as a transitive verb. He said, Monica worried Augustine into sainthood. She worried and prayed him into sainthood. So she never gave up, and he became this incredible, the greatest theologian of that thousand years, maybe with Thomas Aquinas, the two greatest theologians.
And if I recall correctly from that story, as he made that turn a little bit later,
right.
he was into
right.
adulthood. She was about at the end of her life. She didn't have the benefit of seeing a lot of the fruit that she had prayed in that came through his life, if I recall correctly.
You are right. She didn't have the time to enjoy it, but she had the last and most important blessing of her life. She saw him become a fully believing Christian. And that was... Even if her life lasted a moment, that was enough. But he's a magnificent figure. There are other figures of different sorts, not theologians, not popes, but military heroes. Charles Martel, Charlemagne.
Yeah, I mean,
who took up the fight for Christianity. And amazing. You want to talk about connection between contemporary issues and old time issues, issues of the century? Who are they fighting? Who are they fighting in these wars? I'm afraid to tell you that they're fighting Islamists.
Yep.
They're fighting people who wish to destroy Christianity then and now.
So the more things change, the more they don't.
That's right. So there are lots of heroes. There are lots of people who are quite extraordinary. Also, a story. I mean, there's history here. If you're interested in how the monastery started, there's a very important strand in...
Yes.
In Christianity. We see it today. I can't think of the name of the book. Maybe you can. The guy who just wrote, the journalist, that Christians need to remove themselves from the world
yeah.
a little bit.
I found that part of fascinating in the history of the monasteries as you told that
exactly,
in the book.
Exactly. St. Anthony, he goes off into the desert to wrestle with the demons. And he says, yeah, I'm just going to go off by myself. I'm not safe to be around other people. The Simeon Stylites, who built these towers, so that they would not be contaminated with the sins of the world. And they lived up on the top of these towers, and their food was brought up to them, and their waste was sent down. Some things that were laughable, crazy.
Well, in the early stages of that, see, I thought I had an understanding of the later aspects of the monasteries where it was focused on learning, prayer, reading, writing, expounding on
Absolutely.
These theological aspects. Many of the early individuals started this movement couldn't even read. They just went.
That's right.
They just sat in these caves and just sat there and prayed.
Exactly right. They just felt that they needed to get away from the corruptions of the city, of the temptations of the city. But then leaders like St. Benedict. Benedict, I keep correcting for your audience, which for our audience, but you don't mind. Benedict, who established these monasteries, they said we have to be useful, so they became, of course, indispensable to the transmission of Christianity and the documents and doctrines of Christianity by that endless copying. Of documents, and then, of course, speaking of bread, wine, and scholarly study. I went to my first year of high school at Benedictine High School, and these guys could have been from the 7th or 8th century, including the way they punished us when we misbehaved. Well, not quite, but, it was not, let's just say, a friendly admonition that we got.
The lasting effects between the split of the church in the East and the West, which you kind of lead up to and you speak about, write about in the book. I mean, that's had a major geopolitical effect on the world.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen this up close. What do you think? I mean, you've observed it. I haven't traveled as much as you have. Give me your thought first.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, clearly a dividing line. I mean, we see the Eastern Orthodox Church.
Yeah,
we see its influence on Russia in many ways still mingled with government there in Russia, where you
yep.
and it's kind of been stymied by that. It's kind of almost boxed into that region of the world where the Catholic Church has expanded really around the globe.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know the answer to that question in terms of the lasting influence. I do know that there's a certain irreducibility to Christianity. When I hear John McCain, Senator McCain, tell that story. You've heard him tell the story about the guy making the cross in the dirt,
right,
with his boot, as he's in the process of helping others torture McCain. There are these differences. There are these separations, but there is of course a transcendent power to this faith, which I think in some ways diminishes the differences. It has not had the effect in the East that it's had in the West. But the West has its problems too. I mean, you've been to Europe, Tony.
Yeah.
What is the state of Christianity in Europe? Shakespeare talks about bare ruined choirs where late the birds sang. You go into a church on a Sunday morning, not in the Vatican, but in London or in Paris. It's not filled like a mosque is.
Mm. It's true. It's true. And even to some degree, I mean, the mainline denominations here in the United States
you bet.
Have been declining significantly.
You bet.
And I don't think that's reflective of the church. And I think our snapshot and the snapshot that the media takes of the church in general is not accurate. I do believe the church is on the march. Maybe not in Western civilization. It's declined, but I think it's certainly resurged. There's a surge of faith around the world, and I think we're starting to see a resurgence even in the West.
But isn't that, as a friend of mine calls it, the higher proof religion, the ones that are
right that makes a difference?
Yeah. I mean, I remember Father Clements in Chicago, who was running this tough Catholic elementary school in the inner city. And I said, you have any problem getting enrollments? He said, the more demanding we are, the higher the application.
That's right. Absolutely correct.
Because people know what they need. The softening of so many of these churches, where it's hard to know, what's the difference between a believer and a non-believer, I think has hurt them. Meanwhile, the stronger faiths that have more courage to speak their conviction.
Well, I mean, what?
So well,
when you want to anchor or tether yourself to something in a storm, do you want to do it to a boulder or a pebble?
Yeah, this is going on in the Catholic Church now too. You know, there's a fair amount of restiveness about a lot of things. There was about Vatican II. There is about some of the proclamations of this Pope, and I see it. You know, when you have the Latin Mass being said on a Sunday, you will find a packed house.
Bill Bennett, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you for joining us. Fascinating book, fascinating conversation, and I hope you'll come back again soon and join me here on Washington Watch.
Anytime, Tony. You're an exemplary man running an exemplary organization. Thank you very much. Anytime for you.
Thank you, Dr. Bennett. Folks, I want to thank you for joining us today. Check out the website, tonyperkins.com. Get a copy of Bill Bennett's book, Tried by Fire, The Story of Christianity's First 1,000 Years. And let me tell you, listen to the Apostle Paul, what he says. You remember what he said, Ephesians chapter 6. You've done everything you can do. Take an account from the church history. When you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.